Many years ago, there was a rabbi, I guess somewhat slightly absent-minded, who was sitting one night in a small shtetl in Tsarist Russia, and he was learning. He had a sefer, and he was learning by candlelight. And he was sitting outside of his one-room house at night because his wife and children were sleeping inside. So he's sitting outside in the courtyard. He has a sefer, and he has a candle. And he starts pacing back and forth as he's learning and reading. But during the course of this pacing, all of a sudden, without realizing it, he makes his way and finds, you know, that he's so engrossed in the sefer that he's out of the courtyard and he's on the street and he's just walking. He's just walking in the night. And after a few minutes, not only is he out of their courtyard, he's out of their neighborhood. And at this point, he is in a neighborhood of rather unfriendly Russian peasants, where Jews don't belong and could get in a whole lot of trouble. So in this neighborhood, there was a police officer, a member of the Tsar's army, who sees a Jew with a candle and a book, and he's walking. And he says, "Hey!" And the guy doesn't notice, he doesn't hear, doesn't pay any attention. And the officer says, "Hey!" The guy totally doesn't get it. Finally, he walks over to him, and he grabs him by the lapels, and he looks at him and says, "Hey, who are you, and why are you here?" The rabbi looks up, and it's like totally bewildered, and he's looking around, and he doesn't say anything, and he looks at the man, the soldier, he says, "Sir, can I ask you a question?" "Okay." He says, "How much do they pay you in the Tsar's army?" He says, "Well, I get paid 10 rubles per day to do my job." So the rabbi looks at him and he says, "I'll pay you 20 rubles for the next 5 days to come to my house and ask me that question every day." So who are you? We'll talk about it in a little bit. But why are you here? Why are we here? Because I would venture to guess that, and I know by looking around, that there are some very pious people in this room. Certainly far more spiritual than I am. And we're trying to find a way to just get a little bit closer. Yom Kippur, the Yom HaKadosh, is barely a few days away. So that's why we're here. And I look around this room and I feel every year more uncomfortable than the year before, understanding just how much there is to do and what an unbelievable group of people is here. You're here because you are Mavakshim or Mavakshot. Because you're searching for something. And hopefully over the next few minutes, we'll be able to think about a greater idea and then also something very practical with which we can hopefully grow closer to Hashem in our lives, both during this season and then beyond. So as is our tradition for many years now, thank God, tonight we mention a man who in certain respects is synonymous with this time, with the time of tshuva, and that is the Rambam. This journey started many years ago with a small group of women around someone's dining room table, and now, thank God, this is a bracha min hashamayim. So every year we quote the Rambam. And the Rambam tells us something based on a Gemara, and the codification of the Rambam, the language of the Rambam is very precise, and it's very curious. The Rambam tells us in the beginning of the second parak of tshuva about what we could call is platinum tshuva. The best kind of tshuva, what the Rambam calls tshuva gemura. Full, complete, total tshuva. And some of you are familiar with this. that the person finds themselves in the same circumstance now that they were the last time. And this time, they manage. Last time I slipped up and I said what I shouldn't have said. And now I'm in the same circumstance with the same person in the same context. And I'm careful, I don't say it. It's very good. That's Tshuva Gemura. So if I were writing the Rambam, how would I have written this halacha? I would have written that if a person were in the same circumstance, in the same context, with the same cast of characters, and he didn't fall into the same trap, I would have said, Hare zu asa tshuva gemura. This person has done full tshuva. That's what I would have written. But the Rambam does not write that. The Rambam writes that if a person fulfilled this transformative process of tshuva gemura, upiresh velo avar, the person didn't fall in, says the Rambam, zehu bal tshuva gemura. This is a bal tshuva gemura. Literally means someone who owns full tshuva. But it's more than that. That is a personality. That is a person of full tshuva. That's what we call today a bal tshuva. A bal tshuva, that's a type of person. You know what I'm saying? It's a person. And I'm wondering why the Rambam says this, because tshuva, the Rambam starts in the Perek Aleph, tshuva is a mitzvah. And we're going to go through a whole bunch of steps. We're going to have vidui, we're going to verbalize all the things, and we're going to have remorse, and we're going to stop doing all those things, and then we're going to commit to the future. So it's a process, and in certain respects, it's a checklist. So either I did the tshuva, or I didn't do the tshuva. And in this context, I did the full tshuva, tshuva gemura. So why does the Rambam use this term, based on the Gemara, why does the Rambam formulate it, that this person is a bal tshuva gemura? That's my question. Second issue. In Parshas Emor, the Torah describes to us this day, which is coming up, the Yom HaKadosh, Yom HaKippurim, in a very interesting way. The Torah tells us that we fast on this holiday, Me'erev Ad Erev, from the night of the 9th until after the 10th. We don't do any work. And the Torah says the following, Shabbos, Shabbason hu lachem, ve'inisem es nafshoseichem. It is a Shabbos of Shabbos for you, and you should afflict your souls. From the 9th, b'sish alachodesh ba'erev, me'erev ad erev, tish b'su shabbatchem. Again, the repeat of, you should rest your Shabbos. What exactly does it mean that Yom Kippur is a super Shabbos? What does it mean that it is Shabbos, Shabbason? How can you out Shabbos, Shabbos? Quite the contrary. A person who, lo aleinu, who violates Shabbos actually gets a more severe punishment than a person who violates Yom Kippur. So how is it Shabbos, Shabbason, the fact that we don't eat or that we don't have other creature comforts? But the bigger question is not just why is it called Shabbos, Shabbason, but we say in the Pasuk, Shabbos, Shabboson, who? Lachem. It's for you. It's for us. In what way, in what universe, is Shabbos, Shabboson for me? I don't understand that for the life of me. Shabbos, Shabboson, it's an extreme Shabbos. So on a regular Shabbos, we don't cook, and we don't drive, and we don't sew, and we don't create. And Yom Kippur, it's a super Shabbos. So we also don't, maybe you could argue, we don't eat, and we don't anoint ourselves, v'chule, etc. But in what respect is that lachem, is that for you? I would say the opposite. Shabbos, Shabboson, it is for him, with a capital H, for God. Very hard to understand. And then the third issue that we could think about during this time is the Yom Kippur process itself. The Rambam tells us later that Yom HaKippurim is Zman Tshuva Lakol. This is the time to do tshuva. This is the time to fix everything. The Rebbeinu Shlomo is closer to us now than any other time of the year. It's an incredibly beautiful day. So if it's the time for fixing, you know what I would have argued? You know what we should do? We should spend the day out fixing. I should go to all of the people that I need to mend my relationship with on Yom Kippur and try to find them. I should go to the Chesed Fund, and all the times that I missed the opportunity to do Chesed, I should do it on Yom Kippur. Right? This is the time where we're fixing everything. I should eat 3 sandwiches and make sure that I make a bracha with kavanah on each one. I should learn Torah for an hour without interrupting, so there's no bittul Torah. Right? If we're trying to fix everything, especially with tshuva gemura, so why are we sitting in shul all day talking to the wall, to a machzer, to ourselves, to the Ribbono Shel Olam? We should be out there doing something. Get it done. And that's not the case at all. We don't go anywhere. We don't talk to anybody. We don't invite anybody. We just stay in shul and we just daven. We just talk to ourselves. We talk to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So why is that? So one way of thinking about this possibly, which is unquestionably in the words and the ideas of Chazal, is a very powerful formulation which is articulated in an interesting book, a terrific book, called Atomic Habits by a guy by the name of James Clear. This summer, I had the opportunity to reflect in a lot of ways. And so one of the things that I had the opportunity to do, in addition to learning and thinking and traveling, was also to read. And I read this book called Atomic Habits. And as I'm going through this book, there's one piece that jumps out at me, and it's mamish, it hits me like a lightning bolt. And I'm like, this is Yom Kippur. This is tshuva. James Clear writes the following. The whole book is about habits. How do we develop good habits? How do we get rid of bad habits? It's called Atomic Habits. So he has a ha'ara. He says, the key to building lasting habits is, are you ready for this? This is the Chiddush. Is focusing on creating a new identity first. That's his Chiddush. He says, your current behaviors are simply a reflection of your current identity. What you do now is a mirror image of the type of person that you believe that you are, either consciously or subconsciously. To change your behavior for good, he writes, you need to start believing new things about yourself. You need to build identity-based habits. Identity-based habits. That's the Chiddush. So he says, I'll give you an example. Imagine somebody might say, as I did this summer, I want to lose weight. I want to get stronger. So that's good. So somebody might push you and say, well, what do you mean you want to lose weight? Be more specific. How much weight do you want to lose? So say, I want to lose 20 pounds. So those goals are very good. I want to lose weight. I want to lose 20 pounds. But they're focused on the outcome of what it is. They're not focused on the identity. He gives you the following mashal. Imagine this concentric circle. So the outside of the circle are the outcomes. The second circle is the process. But the inner circle, this, is the identity. That's in the middle. The outside is thinking about, what is my result going to look like? The second level, the process, is the system that I'm going to build. So if I'm thinking, I want my outcome to be I'm going to lose 20 pounds, so I need to think about a process. Well, I make sure my fridge has
chicken and fish and vegetables, because if my fridge only has cake batter or cookie dough, which would be very delicious and awesome, it's not going to help me get to my outcome. But the deepest layer of changing your worldview and yourself and your judgments about yourself is changing the identity. It's saying, not so much, I want to lose 20 pounds, or I'm going to control what I have in my fridge. It's saying, I'm the kind of person who can control what I eat. I'm the kind of person who can navigate a meal plan. I'm the kind of person who is in charge of my body. It's who I want to become. So he gives a ton of examples, a lot of great examples. You want to become a better writer? So instead of saying, I'm going to sit down and write 2 paragraphs every week, you first say, I want to become the type of person who writes 1,000 words every day. That's the identity of what that person is. And then you build a process and you measure your outcome. And the way to strengthen that identity, he describes, is you build little wins to demonstrate and to reinforce that that is your identity. We always want to be in consonance with our identity. We don't want this dissonance of feeling like I am this, but I'm acting in a different way. But if I tell myself this is who I am, and I am able to build little habits that reinforce that's who I am, so then taka, that's really who I am going to be. And that's a major yesod in the book. It's a major yesod. But it's not just his shtickle Torah. It's not just his fiddish in terms of thinking about your identity. It's really true when you think about it in terms of our lives. I mentioned that I had the opportunity to recharge this summer in a lot of different ways. So before I disappeared from view in May, I had various conversations with different mentors and people to whom I look for guidance. So one of the people who I got together with is a woman who is a very wise and insightful person. And I was telling her, these are my goals for the summer. I have to prepare X number of shiurim, and I have to write this number of chaburas, and I have to add a whole laundry list. And she said to me, let me ask you a question. Is this summer about what you want to do, or is it about who you want to be? And that changed my summer. That was a totally different question, and it's a totally different kind of experience. Is it about how many shiurim that I'm going to prepare? Is it how many pounds that I'm going to lose? Is it how many opportunities that I have to do this and that? Or what kind of person, what's the identity that I'm going to look like at the end? It's a totally different question. And based on that, I totally recalibrated my schedule, my goals, my aspirations. This, I understand, is the process of tshuva. Tshuva is not really primarily about changing the outcomes. It's not even so much about changing the process. It's really about changing the identity. That's why the Rambam says, later in Halacha Dalet, that midarkei ha-tshuva, from the process of tshuva, one of the things that a person does is mishana shmo. A person changes their name. So you ask yourself, what is that, a game? You know, I had one name, and now I have a different name. Kolomar, the Rambam says, she'ani acher, I'm a new person. Ve'eini oso isha oso oso namaisim. What does the Rambam mean by that? He means exactly this. He means, I am the kind of person who doesn't speak like that. It's not that, oh, yesterday I said Lashon Hara, today I'm going to be careful, I'm not going to speak Lashon Hara. It's that I'm not that kind of person. I'm not a gossiper. And you'll see, because today, on the phone, I'm not going to say Lashon Hara. But in that frame, it's not that I'm focusing on whether I said it or didn't I say it, or how I set my conversation up, or who I spoke with. It's, what kind of person am I? Am I the kind of person who does that, or I'm totally not that kind of person at all? Eini osa ish. And I wonder, is that why the Rambam says that a person who does tshuva gemura is a baal tshuva? It's not so much that the person was osa tshuva, that the person did tshuva. Because if you did or you didn't, that's a question over here. That's a metric. You can say, either I did the outcome or I didn't. Did I lose the weight or I didn't lose the weight? Did I stock the fridge or I didn't stock the fridge? The Rambam says, no. When you had that win, that personal accomplishment, it's not just on this layer or this layer. It's on the inner layer. It reinforces who we are. I am a Baal Tshuva. I'm a Baal Tshuva Gemura on that level. And that's the kind of tshuva that sticks. Why do we go through all the al-chaits? We say al-chait about this, al-chait about that. Perhaps the al-chaits are not just a whole list of things that we did or didn't do. What we say is the al-chait shechatanu lefanecha with this and that, but that's not really me. I'm just telling you, Ribbono Shel Olam, all that stuff that's written in the Machzor, it's not me. I did that, but it's not me. The real me is not the person who says that, or eats that, or does that. That's not me. Eini oso ish. And I'm going to identify all those things so that we should be very clear on them. That stuff, it's not me. Eini oso ish. That's why we're going to go through the al-chaits, so that we can make sure to tell ourselves, that's not the kind of person I am. The kind of person that I am doesn't do that. I did that, but that's not really, that's not the kind of person I am. That's not who I am. There was a work camp, a labor camp in Siberia, in the Gulag, that had a group of people there. There were Jews and non-Jews. And so one of the Jews who was in this mixed barrack in the Gulag once woke up in the middle of the night, and he noticed out of the corner of his eye one of the Polish prisoners, not Jewish, he saw him moving around on his bed. So he doesn't move, and he looks at him, and he notices that the guy is checking around the barracks to make sure nobody's awake. He assumes everybody's sleeping. It's the middle of the night. And this Polish Gentile reaches under the hay and he pulls out a uniform. A uniform from the Polish army. He pulls out the uniform. He checks around, makes sure nobody's looking. He takes off his pajamas and he puts on the Polish uniform. And the little Yid who's watching this out of the corner of his eye, he's thinking, this is so bizarre. The guy puts on the uniform, he buttons it, he straightens up the tie, and he could see on the lapels that this was a somebody. It was either a general or a lieutenant or a sergeant or a somebody. And this Polish guy puts on his uniform, buttons the dress uniform, and starts marching back and forth in the barrack, like this. And then he goes to the wall, and he salutes the frosted glass on the wall. And he turns around, he goes back to his bed, he takes off the uniform, folds it up into a little ball, puts it under the mattress, and he goes back in his pajamas and goes to sleep. So the little Yid is like, this is very bizarre. Very bizarre. Wonder what's the story with this guy? So he figures maybe it's his birthday. Strange, but he figures maybe there's something else. So the next night, he decides he's going to wait up. So he's in his bed, and he's pretending to be asleep, of course. And by now, he's like looking around, and he sees that the Polish officer starts stirring in his bed, starts looking around. So he's looking and looking, he doesn't see anybody, and the Yid is like, like Shabbos morning by the drasha, mamish, it looks like he's 100% out cold. So he gets up And the Polish guy pulls out again from under the mattress the uniform the next night, and he puts it on, he gets the dress uniform on, he starts walking down, he's got it like this, he's saluting the window, he goes back, he puts it on there. So now the Yid knows there's something up with this. So the third night, he does the same thing. He decides he's going to wait up and watch, what's this Meshuggah doing? So he doesn't want to scare him, so he stays there in his bed, and he watches, and the exact same thing happens the third night. So he doesn't say anything to him, but in the morning, on the breakfast line, they're carrying their trays, whatever they got in the gulag, and he says to him, you know, like one of those awkward conversation starters, I happen to be watching you at 3 o'clock in the morning. He says, can I ask you a question? I apologize, but we do share a barrack in the gulag. And I happened to notice the last 3 nights in a row, you got up at 3 o'clock in the morning. You started parading around in the barrack in a Polish officer's uniform. What's up? So the guy looks at him and he says, you listen to me. He says, before they took me here, I was a lieutenant in the Polish army. And now I have to take a rag and I have to clean the floor on my hands and knees. He says, you know what that could do to me? It would be terrible. So every night, I get up at 3 o'clock and I remind myself, I am a lieutenant in the Polish army. And what the Russians say or do will never change that, because I am a lieutenant. That's my identity. That's who I am. Isn't that what we're all about? Isn't that what the Yom HaKadosh is about? But now I can really understand what it means, Shabbos Shabbosom, and how it relates to our identity in the process of tshuva. Because what is Shabbos? I'll tell you a secret that you already know, but maybe you didn't pay attention to. There are actually 0, and I mean 0, biblical mitzvos to do on Shabbos. FS, 0. There are a lot of things not to do on Shabbos. There are 39 for starters, and then there's a whole bunch more. But what are the mitzvahs of Shabbos? So we have a pasuk that tells us, Zochor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. So the Rambam tells us in Hilchos Shabbos, that's a mitzvah, that's a biblical commandment to recite Kiddush and Havdalah. Do you know when you recite Kiddush according to the Rambam? You recite Kiddush before Shabbos starts in many cases. Not even on Shabbos. The Rambam's opinion is, you say Kiddush before Shabbos. You say it on Shabbos, but the Rambam thinks you could say Kiddush before Shabbos. This is in the end of Hilchos Shabbos. So you say Kiddush before Shabbos, you say welcome Shabbos, and then you say Havdalah Motsoi Shabbos after Shabbos is over. But what that means is there is not a single mitzvah to do on Shabbos, according to the Chumash. None. So what do? The answer is we do nothing. Because if we had a mitzvah to do something, well, that doing, that action, that's an outcome. You can measure that. Did I shake the lulav? Did I not shake the lulav? Did I do? Did I not do? You can measure it. Shabbos is not about doing and not doing. It's not about becoming. I spend the whole week becoming and becoming and becoming. The Shisha Simei Masa. Come Shabbos, my goal is not to do anything. It's not to become. It's just to be. Shabbos is about being. For some of us, this is why Shabbos is so hard. Because we're so used to becoming and doing and accomplishing and checking off the outcome that when it comes time to spend 24 hours not doing anything, we don't even know what to do with ourselves. We're like totally lost. But now we know what Shabbos is about. Because if the whole week is about the outcomes and the processes, Shabbos is about the identity. It's about letting go of all the stuff that we do and just focusing on our identity. Who am I? What are my goals? What am I trying to accomplish in life? That's what Shabbos is supposed to be, but it's difficult. Because first I have to get to shul, and then Shabbos now gets a lot more complicated, because since they put up an Eruv, we love the Eruv, not taking anything away from the Eruv, but now I have to worry about Shabbos company, and do my napkin holders match the chargers, and then the cleaning up, and the setting up, and God help us. You know what I'm saying? Like, Shabbos used to be a peaceful time, now it's so stressful. It's like unbelievably stressful. You have to get up for Hashkama just to get ready, and then by the time you finish the lunch, and did they have a good time? Didn't they have a good time? To this dessert, was it a little runny? It was not so runny. You know, there's a lot. There's so much. I have a friend, a close chavra of mine, who said, you know, I was talking to him about something once. He's like, you should really have a sefer that you learn on Shabbos. I'm like, oh, that's such a great idea. That conversation was like 2.5 years ago. Because by the time I finished the stuff that I'm supposed to regular, you know, learn, and cleaning up and taking this one to their play date or going to the, like, there's no time. Shabbos is done. So you know what the Rebbe Shlom says? I'll do you a favor. I'll give you one day where you can't even have company. You can't even have lunch. It's Shabbos Shabboson. There's nowhere to go except sit with yourself. Think about who you are. It's so unbelievable. Now I understand exactly why it's Shabbos Shabboson Lachem. It's the greatest gift for us. That no one is hacking us on our cell phone, and no one is knocking on the door, and no one is even coming for lunch. Gornish me, gornish, nothing. I just sit by myself and think about who I am, what's important to me, what is my life all about. Shabbos is about being, not doing. So Shabbos Shabboson is about really being. Who do we want to be? In an ideal world, every Shabbos, we would have time to sit by ourselves on a comfortable chaise next to the window where there are palm trees, in theory. Imagine. And think about, not what do I want to do this week, but who do I want to be this week? What kind of child do I want to be this week? What kind of parent do I want to be? What kind of friend? What kind of Ovid Hashem? But if we haven't done that for 51 weeks for Shabbos because we've had a lot on our plate, we could certainly do that on Yom Kippur. And it's lachem, it's for you. So now we could talk about something a little bit more in the realm of practical. Like, how do we do this? What does it mean to take time to shape our identity? We need to create those moments in which we shape our identity. And what do those moments look like? So my mother-in-law, who, as many of you know, gives me a lot of important advice on Hadracha and a lot of Torah. So one of the things she said to me before the summer, as I was putting together my schedule, she said, you know, you should really start meditation. I don't know what that means when your mother-in-law tells me you have to start meditation. There's probably a lot of layers to deconstruct about that. I'm going to take it at the face value. You know what I'm saying? Just take it for what it is. So first thought comes to me like, that's weird. And there's no way that I could possibly sit in one place and not do anything or go anywhere or talk to anybody for like 5 minutes. There's no way that's happening. But as a wise person that I am, I listened to my mother-in-law. So before I started on this journey, I picked up this book by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan called Jewish Meditation, A Practical Guide. Then I picked up another book. And then I picked up a Rebbe in meditation, Rabbi Yehoshua Karsh from Northbrook. He's an expert in meditation. He's amazing. And whether you call this kavana, which means intent or focus, or you call it hisbonenus, where you're thinking about how something connects to Hashem, or you just call it meditation, whatever you're comfortable with. I'm not going to weird you out over here. But I can tell you that I just decided I'm going to read this book, and I'm going to try. What does it mean just to establish your identity, to think about who you are? Because now that I understand my goal is not to do more, it's to be more, So this is going to be to clear out all the space of everything else, all the noise that's going on in my life, so that I can just focus on who I am and be calm and not be texting and shaving and eating breakfast at the same time. So I sat down in their guest room in North Miami Beach in Florida in a chair for 22 minutes and I did not move. It was impossible. But all of a sudden, you realize, you know what? You won't die. I did live from that experience. Now, I did something called mantra meditation, where I picked a specific phrase that I was focusing on over and over and over. But the idea is that you're taking all the craziness that's going on in your mind, and whatever comes into your mind, which is a lot of crazy things, you realize when you actually start thinking about what you're thinking about, it gets pretty weird. And you just kind of like, you just let it go. No big deal. I thought about that, but I keep coming back to my same point. Meditation is just controlled thinking. That's what it is. So you keep coming back to this place. What if we took time and we came back to this place of who am I? Because it's not doing. It's Adaraba. It's putting away the phone. It's putting away the lulav. It's putting away all the stuff that we do, all the outcomes and all the systems. And it's just saying, wait a second. Can I just get a few minutes with myself? You might find out something weird. One of my most favorite stories about Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky. Awesome story. He describes how, you know, he was a prominent psychiatrist. And he ran this unbelievable center outside of Pittsburgh dealing with mamish people who are nebuch, so troubled. The most severe kinds of addiction and everything mamish, very difficult. So he's seeing all these psychiatric patients all the time. He's totally stressed out like a crazy person. So he says he decided, someone gave him advice, he was going to go to Arkansas to the hot springs. So he goes to Arkansas and he meets the, I guess you call it, the mikveh attendant in the Lashon Chol. So the guy takes him into this whirlpool bath. He says, okay, have a seat. There's water. Sit. Now, this is for sure pre-cell phone days, but if there were cell phones, he would have had it in the outside room. So he's sitting in this mineral bath, and he says, after 5 minutes, he's like, okay, good, all right, I'm ready to go. So he gets out of the bath, he goes to the door, he knocks on the door, and he says, okay, I'm ready to go. And the guy says, no. You have to sit there for 20 minutes. He says, no. 5 minutes, gesinnt, you know, you stay there. He says, no. If you're here, you have to sit there for 20 minutes. He says it was the worst 20 minutes of his life. He couldn't stand sitting with himself for 20 minutes. And then he realized, Taki, he has a psychiatric problem. He's got to fix himself. And that begins a whole journey about understanding who I am and being comfortable with myself and what is my identity. Who am I? Just being comfortable with ourselves. So this is one mahalach of thinking about who we are. And the halacha gives us ample places and times to do this. But Yom Kippur is certainly one of them. But for some people, that's like way too weird. It's not for everybody. But I wonder if there's one way that we can bring this down, even for people who might be allergic to the words Jewish meditation. It might not be for you. And it's not every day, and it doesn't have to be 22 minutes. It could be 5 minutes, you know, whatever. You know, it's the point is, just sit and think about who we are. That's what it is. It could be during Shema Kolenu of Shimon Esrei. But I think if we go back to the model of Shabbos as the time when we actually don't do anything, when we're not doing, we're just being, there is a unique opportunity on Shabbos that we have to think about who we are. And I have to tell you that I am jealous because it's specifically for many of you in this room, it's your mitzvah, and for some of you, it will become your mitzvah, please God, one day. And that is the mitzvah of Hadlokas Ner Shabbos. There was a great Hasidic master who lived in Galicia. His name is Reb Chaim Chernovitzer, Zchus Yagan Aleinu. And Reb Chaim Chernovitzer wrote a book. He was the man of Shabbos. He was Shabbos personified. He loved Shabbos. His whole life, Agantzel Leben, his whole life, everything was about Shabbos. So he wrote a book called Siduro Shel Shabbos, The Order of Shabbos, what Shabbos is all about. And at the beginning of the book, he has an entire section. Now, most of what he writes over here, it's based on Kabbalah, it's based on the Zohar. It's so far in the deep end, and I'm like with the little tube and the floaties in the shallow. So I would not profess to understand even a miut, a minority of what he says. But a crumb, that I can understand. So he has in Shoresh Beis, in Anaf Beis, he talks about the power of Shabbos candles. And how the word ner also means nefesh and ruach, the two parts of our soul that we can raise up. Ner is the gematria, he says, of or gadol, of a great light. It's the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it's the light of Shabbos, it's the light of peace that you bring into our home, into our life. It's Chafetz Chesed. It's the same gematria. And he quotes a zillion Zohars about how when you light Shabbos candles, the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam is brought into your home, into your world, into your life. He goes on and on of the tikkunim and the light that is created when you light Shabbos candles. It's an unbelievable experience. Most of the time, I'm not privy to that experience because either I'm still in the shower, shaving, trying to get out of the house, or I'm at Mincha, where I belong. But this year, over the summer, we spent several Shabbosos just with our family. So I went on the map, Chabad, and I found some very interesting places within 100 miles of here, where they have a shul and a hotel that has a kitchen and a table and enough beds to sleep people in our family, generally speaking. So that meant in some of these places they only have a Shabbos morning minyan. So I was there in the hotel when Nechama was lighting Shabbos candles with the children. It was unbelievable. They have a special niggun that they light the Shabbos candles. And then she has a special tefillah that she says out loud in English with the little children about the grandparents and the family and how Hashem should bless this one and that one. And I understood what Reb Chaim Chernovitzer was writing. The light that is generated by these Jewish women who stand by the candles and bring in the Shabbos with Hadlokas Neiros, that's what the Zohar is talking about. What would happen if we did the following atomic habit? Why does he call the book Atomic Habits? Because an atom is very small, but can have huge, massive consequences. What if we took 2 minutes after we lit candles and we just stood there? We just looked at the Shabbos candles. It's not an easy thing to do, to stand in one place for 2 minutes. Because we're pulled in a lot of different directions. The soup is too hot. The soup is too cold. This, I'm falling asleep. I need, my book is waiting. Everything. There's a lot of stuff. But to try to do 2 minutes before Hadlokas Neiros, that's like Pikuach Nefesh. Like, I would literally not leave this room alive if I made a suggestion that anybody do anything 2 minutes before Lech Benching. I'm not that dumb. But 2 minutes after Lech Benching, there's nothing you could do. You cannot do anything at that point. The chalent, it either is or it isn't. You just got to be okay with that, right? The malach should watch over the chalent. Imagine if we stood, if you, I don't know, what do I know from this? I'm just speaking theoretically. But if you stood and you just looked at your Shabbos candles, or you closed your eyes and you thought to yourself, I am a person of Shabbos. I'm a person of tranquility. I'm a person of rest. I'm a person of peace. I'm a woman of or, of light. Could change our whole life. 2 minutes. 2 minutes looking at the light of Shabbos. Just thinking about what that light means in my identity, not in what I'm doing, but who I am. What kind of person am I? Maybe it could change somebody's life. And we'll conclude with an old, beautiful story, a legend that did change someone's life and maybe could change ours. What does it mean to change our identity by just looking at the lights of the Shabbos candles? By just thinking about who we are, what kind of people are we? Habal Leinu for this year on Shabbos Shabbosim. So you know there was a great Hasidic master who was known as the Choza of Lublin. The Choza is someone who sees. And the Choza could mamish see from one end of the world to the other end of the world. He had incredible spiritual vision. The problem was the Choza was also very poor. So his wife didn't have it so easy getting things together and keeping their house running. I don't know exactly how she went. We'll say her name is Mrs. Choza. You know what her name was. So one Friday afternoon, the wife of the Choza of Lublin realized that they had no money in the bank. They had nothing under their pillow. They had nothing in the drawer. And they had no candles for Shabbos. And she didn't have a leichter anymore to pawn off because she had already pawned that for something else. And they didn't have an esrog box and they had nothing, shebe nothing. They had no money to buy Shabbos candles. So she doesn't know what to do. It's Friday afternoon. She looks in the cupboard. She sees there's no candles. So by this time, the choza had already left. He went to shul. He went to the mikveh. Like, usually when there's a crisis, we have very important things to do. You know that. It's usually a mitzvah. It's usually going to shul. So when there's a crisis, you can find us in shul. I'm just saying. That's the minhag. There's a reason for that, I think. I don't know what it is, but there's a good reason. Probably because we'd get in the way of solving the problem. So her husband, the choza, is out in shul. He's getting ready for Shabbos. She's home alone. She has no Shabbos candles. So she's sitting. She has no idea what she's going to do, but she can't go without the light of Shabbos. So she goes outside, and she is just standing on the street outside the house looking around. Maybe, you know, who knows what's going to turn up, what's going to be for her. So lo and behold, charging down the street is a beautiful chariot with four fine white horses. And in the back of this chariot is a guy from the neighborhood, from Lublin. But unfortunately, this guy is in his chariot and he has places to go. It's Erev Shabbos in Lublin. It's 30 minutes before Lich Benching and he's in a chariot and he's going somewhere. And where he's going, there's no Lichadodi and there's no Karibon and there's no Shabbos. Because this guy, although maybe he had heard about Shabbos somewhere, his life had nothing remotely connected to Shabbos. He spent his Friday nights and Saturday nights and Sunday nights and a few other nights hanging around in all kinds of places of ill repute with all kinds of people, women and this and that. It was mamish. I don't want to say that this guy was mamish a lowlife, but he was a lowlife and he had too much money. So he was really living it up. So meanwhile, his chariot is coming down the street. You see, it's beautiful horses, and he has a coachman. And as he's whipping the chariot, as they're going fast and fast down the street to get where he has his whatever date he has for that night, lo aleinu, they just get past the wife of the choza standing outside. And he looks out the window of the chariot, and he sees a woman standing there, and she looks clearly like she's distressed. So he says to the driver, he says, stop! So he says, stop. So he leans out of the window and he says, ma'am, you need something? And she looks up and she recognizes this fellow She also recognizes that he's a person of means. And she says, to tell you the truth, tonight is Shabbos, and I don't have candles. I just need 2 candles, that's all, but I have nothing. So the guy looks at the driver, and he says, don't we have like some kind of emergency bag in the trunk of this thing where they have, you know, the flashlight equivalent of the 19th century? Do we have candles? We always travel with the emergency bag, right? The driver says, Avada. Of course. So he goes in the trunk and he sees there's firewood and there's like a little bit of canned food and then there's a bunch of candles in case they get, I don't know, stuck somewhere. So the wealthy guy, he says to the Misharis, he says, give her 2 candles. She needs candles, give her 2 candles. And at that moment, the wife of the Chozer takes the candles, she runs in to get them ready to light Shabbos candles. And there is a havraka, there is like a lightning bolt that strikes the Chozer of Lublin in Shul. He's sitting at his shtender, and he's reading Shir HaShirim before Shabbos, getting ready for the Holy Shabbos. And he hears crazy voices coming from heaven, a huge tumult. And he closes his eyes, and he sees that the angels are in a tempest. It's a crazy balagan in heaven. There's a huge argument. Because some of the angels are saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam, look at this man. He just gave the wife of the Chozer of Lublin candles for Shabbos. Unbelievable. What a mitzvah. What a beautiful thing. And then there's another bunch of angels. They don't look very friendly. And they say, what are you talking about? This guy's the biggest menuvel. And he's an oisvarf. And just, ugh, disgusting. What are you even looking at this guy for? So they go back and forth and back and forth, and the Chozer's watching this debate in the heavenly tribunal. And finally, the Malachim say, Nu, Borei Olamim, what do we say about this guy? So the Boshem looks at the angels and he says, let me ask you, did he ever experience the light of Shabbos, this guy? So even the prosecuting angels, they'll say, not really, no. No. He didn't grow up in a house where they didn't have any Shabbos. He never had any close friends who experienced Shabbos. Shabbos wasn't their thing. So he never had that. Okay. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says to the angels, I have a pshara, I have a compromise. What we should do is let him experience the light of Shabbos. That'll be his merit. And that'll be it. We're not going to give him such a big reward. We're not going to, you know, put him in the front of Gan Eden when he gets up here, but let him experience the light of Shabbos. He gave her the Shabbos candles. So that's what they decided. Meanwhile, back in this earth, this guy was kind of curious because this woman was obviously so devout and so committed and so passionate about lighting her Shabbos candles that she was willing to stand outside and beg on the street corner from a total stranger that should give her something to light for Shabbos candles. So he's sitting there in his coach. And he tells the guy, just give me 5 minutes. Just wait here. And through the window of the coach, he sees the window of the Lubliners, of the Chozer's house. And in the window, he sees the wife of the Chozer of Lublin lighting Shabbos candles. And the guy's looking out the window, and he sees 2 lights. And all of a sudden, for the first time in his whole life, he saw the light of Shabbos. He saw the light of Shabbos, he saw the light of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he saw his own reflection in the light of Shabbos. And he's looking at this light and he's thinking, who am I? Who am I? And why are you here? Who am I and why am I here? And he just keeps staring. And for 2 minutes, he just looks at the lights of Shabbos. And at the end of those 2 minutes, he calls to the Misharis, he calls to the driver, and he says, you know, I think I have to change my plans. Do you know where is the synagogue of this family? So the Mishnah says, I don't know, but let me find out. So he runs downstairs and he knocks on the door. And the wife says, yes, can I help you? He says, can you just tell me, where does your husband go to the synagogue? She says, you know, 2 blocks away, you'll see there's a shul. Okay. The guy turns around, he gets out of the horse, he gets out of the chariot, he walks to the shul. And that's the end of the story. Because from that day on, he became one of the closest chassidim of the Chozo of Lublin. Because the light of Shabbos enabled him to stop all of the crazy things that he had been doing his whole life and just ask himself the question, who am I? And why am I here? This is a gift of Shabbos, but more than Shabbos, this is the gift of Yom Kippur. And maybe in a certain respect, this is the deepest tshuva of all. The tshuva that we say to the Ribono Shel Olam, yes, we have a lot of stuff, the outcomes, we need to work on those. And yes, we have a lot of processes that need to be fixed, we need to work on those. We got some last year, we got some this year. Maybe, hopefully, we made a little step forward. But what's the ikar, what's the main thing? We say to the Ribono Shel Olam, who am I? We say, I am a Baal Tshuva Gemura. I am a person for whom all these things that I did, they're not really me. I'm able to answer the question, who am I, by taking the time to really think for ourselves. And maybe it's for Yom Kippur, and maybe for some people it'll be at other times during the day, and maybe for some it'll be that time, those 2 minutes, for those who want to experiment. You don't have to commit to it for your entire life. You can just try and look at your Shabbos candles for 2 minutes, and we just ask ourselves what it means to be a person of Shabbos, a person of light, a person of life. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant all of us the light of Shabbos, the peace and the tranquility of Shabbos Shabboson, and the Shnas Chayim B'Sholom as Baalei Tshuva, as people who are really connected to it. Come on, let's